This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport, powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, whether that's Rovers throwing in a drab 0-0 in the Championship or taking Newcastle all the way to a penalty shootout in the fifth round of the FA Cup, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too. So, the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18+. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This is the 4,000 Horse Podcast.
You are listening to the 4,000 Horse Podcast, brought to you by the people at brfcs.com and sponsored by the lovely people at The Terrace.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the 4,000 Holes Podcast, the What Now Show, proudly part of the TalkSport Fan Network. I'm your host, Roger, joined this week by Ian, Rich, Ryan and Holly. We've got three topics, as usual, to get into. The first of all, we'll be looking at how the panel are feeling ahead of a big game at Leicester this weekend. Question section two, we'll be looking at who shoulders most of the blame for the predicament this season. And we'll finish, of course, with the usual April Player of the Month, some fans forum concerns, a little chat on the new EFL deal, and even a little quiz in the podcast extra. So let me get straight to the panel. Welcome all. I'll come straight to Holly. You've not been on the podcast for a bit, Holly. Just recently back from a trip to Japan. And as Ian was saying just before we started recording, we're probably more tempted to talk about Japan for 45 minutes, but we won't. This is a Rovers podcast. I'll bring question number one to you. And that is, how are you feeling? How confident are you feeling ahead of the final match of this season?
Not at all. with the current form that we're in, the confidence levels are up and down. I can't see us going in and pulling a win out, if I'm really honest. Even with Leicester already winning the league, I think they're still on for 100 points. So I think that's definitely something they'll want to go for. And it's at home. So I think they'll be in the best spirits for them, sorry. Obviously trying to end season on a high for their fans. So I'm not confident at all, really. And to be honest, the overall feeling I have right now is I just want to get to the end of the season. Like, whatever happens, let's just draw a line under the sand and see where we are.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the constant theme from Rovers fans up and down the country. Ryan, on loan this evening from the Artie at Labori podcast. I was listening to that in the car on the way to work yesterday. And you said exactly the same thing there, wasn't it? Which is, will this season just end? How confident are you?
Well, thanks for having me on and doing some more therapy with all these Rovers fans. It's always good to do that. Feeling quite nervy. And as you've pointed out, I've been wanting the season to end for the last few weeks. And I've actually pleaded at the end of that pod for the last 2 weeks, can we just get the bloody job done? And we haven't. And here we are. How I'm feeling is I've seen all the permutations, you know, 4% chance of going down. And on paper, it looks like a lot has got to happen for Rovers to go down. But I actually think that it's not as unlikely as those permutations and those percentages might suggest. I look at Leicester and I think they're going to be going for the 100 points. And I live in Lincolnshire, and Lincoln City have just found out the hard way what it's like playing a team who are on the piss. Portsmouth ended their playoff run. So Leicester's not an easy game. Sheffield Wednesday might well get the luxury that we did at the Stadium of Light and get the result that they need to get over the line. And then I just look at Plymouth and Birmingham, and I think they're two tough places to go in the Championship when the chips are down. And it would not be against the realms of possibility that those two get the home win that they need. So I'm feeling more nervous than a 4% permutation. And the only thing I soothe myself with is the fact that maybe Hull or Norwich might just peg one of those two back. That's what I'm hanging my hat on, really. And the fact that Plymouth got that draw, Millwall beat Plymouth, sorry, and took the draw for Plymouth out of the equation is the thing that's making me feel less nervous. But as you heard on that podcast, Roger, that's all a smokescreen. I'm absolutely bricking it inside and need Saturday gone.
We're all in the same boat, Ryan. No, nothing to be embarrassed about there. Rich, I'll come to you. How confident are you feeling ahead of this weekend's matchups? Of course, you'll have seen the buzzword of the week, which will be on all the Rovers fans' lips, permutations. Do you buy into sort of this 4%, or do you think, like Ryan, that perhaps it's a bit more precarious than one would first look at?
Some Rovers fans would probably just write off Leicester and they finish the season on 50 points and you then sat watching the others. Plymouth have won 1 in 11 at home, so it'd be like the thing if they were to turn it round. My big thing is I'm looking for favours from others, which probably shows the lack of confidence I've got in Rovers, but then again, didn't have much when they went to Leeds on the back of the 5-0 against Bristol City. But I think Sunderland owe Rovers a favour for last year, beating Millwall on the final day. That got them in the playoffs, so we'll call that one in this weekend. The Hull owe Rovers a favour for the shambles of the Boxing Day postponement. There's obviously that angle as well. And David Wagner, I've still not forgiven him for 2017, the Huddersfield team he picked, which was actually Birmingham away. So if he Rovers won, there's three favours we can call in this weekend. But I do think the likelihood is probably Rovers fans will be checking the phones, or they will watching their own team this weekend. But it'd be great if they could, you know, just do it themselves. But I think it wouldn't be a cause for celebration if they do stay up, which is probably the wider thing, that there's probably no win out this weekend. That, you know, stay up, it's not a cause for celebration, and go down, it really is a disaster from how far they've fallen.
No, absolutely. Some great points there. Ian, I'll come to you. Your thoughts going into this weekend's matches?
Well, my coping strategy, as you well know, because you helped me to calculate it, was to completely discount Rovers. So like Rich said, I said, as far as I'm concerned, Rovers are losing. So let's take them out of the equation. This sounds like the world's worst game show, doesn't it? I'm also saying that Sheffield Wednesday are going to get the point they need at Sunderland. So let's take them out of the equation and let's focus on what's left. And what's left is Plymouth and Birmingham. And it's one of them not winning. That's what it actually boils down to, isn't it? And it's absolute simplest terms. So, yeah, I think it will be one of those where you've got the phone, you've got the radio, you've got people ringing you, texting you, whatever, with updates, just see what's what. I retweeted a fabulous clip on the BRFCS account earlier tonight from a Birmingham City. It's BCFC Top Gear or something, where they take Top Gear clips and they recaption them. And it's like Jeremy Clarkson driving down the road. It's a BCFC on Saturday. Whoa! I'm going to turn the car over if we're not careful. And then a car goes past it, so it says Leicester leading Blackburn 2-0. Then Sammy Smodics equalises and James May is laughing in the car behind them. I think that's what it's going to be like. I think this isn't the first time that Rovers could potentially get relegated in my support. I think that the thing that concerns me most is if we go down this time, there's no way that we are as well equipped as we were under Mowbray to come back. So I think if we go down this time, we are down for quite a while.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big fear. I'm trying to add some meat to the bones, trying to be optimistic. I was doing my research. I've been on Plymouth forums. I've been on the Birmingham forums. I've been on the Sheffield Wednesday forums. And the Sheffield Wednesday forums are probably the most confident, but some of them are thinking it'd be just like Wednesday to go down. The Birmingham City fans are convinced they're down, and the Plymouth fans are convinced that they're down as well. If you go on the BRFCS forums, BRFCS.com forums, of course, which we are affiliated with, there is a big thread, the pessimistic thread, where everyone thinks we're going to go down. So, of course, three of those fan bases aren't going to be down on Saturday. Let's hope it's one of ours. Just other things to look out for. Leicester got 102 points in 2013-14, which is their championship record, which, of course, they can't beat. Even if they beat Rovers, they'll only get to 100. There is nothing for getting to 100. It sounds nice, but there isn't an extra prize for that. So that's another thing that maybe works in our favour. I just want to come back along the panel, though, and I just want to ask, what's the dream scenario in terms of can Rovers get in front, defend for their lives, and take a point? Or
Well, what I'm hoping for is that Jamie Vardy, in a vodka and Skittles induced frenzy, lunges straight into someone from Rovers straight at the kickoff, gets a red card, and Leicester are down to 10 men with 89 and a half minutes to play. That's kind of what I'm hoping for there. I think that scenario would give Rovers a fighting chance of keeping the score down to 2 or 3. I'm still scarred by that time Arsenal went down to 10 and Thierry Henry single-handedly absolutely murdered us. So having watched Vardy last night, he's still got that evil gene, hasn't he? He's still a bundle of mischief, shall we say, being polite. I'm hoping that Norwich do the business for us, because I think Birmingham are probably the most vulnerable given where they are. I think if Norwich were to score first, then you're sort of saying to Birmingham, you've got to get two quickly to get yourselves to have a chance of getting out of it. So I think that would be my dream scenario. So Leicester going down to 10 in the first 5 minutes, then preferably going down to 9 in the next 10 minutes would give us a fighting chance.
Rich, come back to you on this one. You mentioned their Plymouth 1 win in 11. Of course, that win was against Leicester, which is ironic. The weekend of shock results were Palace beat Liverpool and Rovers beat Leeds and Plymouth beat Leicester. And there was another one in the Premier League, wasn't there, which was a 1-0 score and a sort of a freak result. Was it Arsenal getting beat? Talk to us about Plymouth. Talk to us about Hull. Hull, they spent a lot of money this season. They put all their eggs in one basket. It really is playoffs or a bust for them, isn't it, with the lineup and the amount of finances they've pumped into this season?
Yeah, a few weeks ago, and thought they were pretty sure of a playoff spot and we're really just winding down the season, whereas obviously Hull drawing has at least kept their hopes alive. From a Rovers point of view, like, goal difference is probably taken out of it in terms of Rovers still can go down on goal difference, with Plymouth 2 points behind, having lost at Millwall, getting hammered at Leicester doesn't make a difference for Rovers. So I think that was something I was looking at ahead of it. But yeah, I really think it's the other scores. Like you said, every fan of every club will be looking at the situation and think they're going down. Plymouth seems to be the one where I think, while they did pull that result out against Leicester, I think if they got out of it, because I do think Birmingham will get a positive result against Norwich. So I'm looking at Plymouth really as the one. But Sunderland could turn it on against Sheffield Wednesday. Like, you think you're looking at these teams, and all the way through, I've thought that it would be Plymouth who go down. I thought Birmingham would get themselves out of it. So I think we are looking at Plymouth, and it's just whether Hull can pull it out of the bag. Like you said, they've got a very, very talented team. And I think if they weren't to make the playoffs, that Liam Rossini voted well in the nominations for manager of the season, would probably look a bit foolish. So yeah, I think it will be Plymouth that go personally. But again, it's probably looking to scores elsewhere, because I do think Rovers will struggle, because I can see Leicester having a bit of a party on the final day, and they'll really want to go into the summer in fine form.
Yeah, and just to share with the listeners what you're going to be doing on Saturday to cope, your coping strategy.
Yeah, it wasn't really a coping strategy. I didn't really realise that I booked to play golf, but I'd have probably been looking at my phone, checking scores elsewhere, so I might as well do that in the fresh air whilst finding a golf ball in the trees than actually sat watching it, because these are the situations where you can't affect it. I think this is where it's worse. If it was just on Rovers, where if it was, and I know they can affect it themselves, and if they get a positive result themselves, but you're still going to be checking things elsewhere. So try and take a bit of the stress out of the situation.
I'm playing golf with me. I think that's the most stressful I ever get playing any sport. I think it's just clubs thrown everywhere and sand everywhere. Ryan, how are you going to cope on Saturday? Are you going to the game? Are you going to watch it at home through sort of bitten fingernails and gritted teeth?
Yeah, not at the game, sadly. So I'll be with the boys before we go away for Maybank holiday weekend. So we're literally straight in the car afterwards. So that will be a miserable car journey if the worst happens. So that'll be my coping strategy. Just in terms of dream scenario for me, Roger, I think there's two things for me. The first is if Preston can get an early lead at the Hawthorns and give Hull a real incentive to go and get their result at Plymouth, I think that would be pretty handy for us if Preston were able to do that favour, because Hull's goal difference, I think, is the worst out of the two. So I think Hull are needing an element of favours as well. And then the second, if we're accepting the position that Rovers are likely to lose the game, if at worst we're 1-0 down and we know we need a point to stay up, then just being in the game in that final 10 minutes and just being able to have it still in our own destiny and save our season in our own hands rather than relying on others. I think that feels like an element of the dream scenario as well. So those two things combined, I think, are important on Saturday for me.
Yeah, that's a great point. Great point that really Rovers want to have their destiny in their own hands for as long as possible into the 90 minutes. Yeah, yeah, great point there. Holly, come to you finally. Sort of dream scenario or sort of something to look out for on Saturday. How are you going to cope? Are you going to the game? I know it's pretty local for you.
It is, but I'm not going. I couldn't do it to myself. No. I live probably 30 miles away. It's probably one of the closest grounds to me. But yeah, I just couldn't do it. And I had people messaging me saying, oh, we'll be on the pitch if we stay up. And I was just thinking to myself, no, we won't, because we've got nothing to celebrate if we stay up. But yeah, I think dream scenario for me is we win, obviously. Yeah. And I think the best way for us to do that is either getting an early goal or two would be nice, or holding out for as long as possible, like we did at Leeds, and then getting a late winner. I think the sooner Leicester score, I think it's pretty much game over, because we've shown mm-hmm. time and time again that we cannot come back from coming from behind. So that is top of my list. If we can just win and keep it in our own destiny, then that is obviously what we should be aiming for. I'm with Rich on this one. I think Plymouth for me are the ones that if we are losing ourselves, I think they're the ones that are going to be the ones that are going to help us stay up. I think if you look at Birmingham over the past few seasons, they've been dancing around that relegation zone, and they always somehow manage to just hang on.
Plenty to consider ahead of the weekend for sure. Thanks to the panel for that. We're going to be back in section two, but just before I leave you, I'm going to leave you with, we talked about it before, the buzzword of the week, permutations. And as Ian mentioned, there are 81 potential outcomes this weekend, two of which send Rovers down. Now, if you want to have a bet, and I don't endorse gambling, of course, it's not a way to get money, but if you're that confident that Rovers are going to go down and you're waiting for the inevitable to happen, you can get odds of 19-1 on Leicester winning, Plymouth winning, Birmingham winning, and Sheffield Wednesday to win or draw, which is the only way Rovers are going to go down if that happens, or those two scenarios happen. So, you know, maybe that might soften the blow. And I'll tell you this, is my dream scenario is that Norwich win, a late winner at St Andrews, and Ashley Barnes scores the winner for Norwich. And it's the most celebrated Rovers goal of the season comes from Mr. Ashley Barnes. And who knows, he might even get a ripple of applause when we play them next season. But hey, stranger things have happened. We're going to be back in section two, though, to talk about some more on this season. Be sure to join us then.
Hello, this is Sam Smodics here, and welcome to the 4,000 Holes podcast.
Welcome back to section two of this week's 4,000 Holes podcast, the What Now show, proudly part of the TalkSport Fan Network, with me, Roger, joined this week by Ian, Rich, Ryan and Holly. And I'm going to come to Ryan first for question two, which is, who shoulders most of the blame for Rovers' predicament this season? Do you think it's John Dal Thomason, John Eustace, Venky's troubles in India, poor recruitment, sloppiness in January? The list goes on. But I'd like to know what you think. And also, what would you change first ahead of next season, no matter which division? Ryan, over to you.
Root cause is Venky's, of course. That's the obvious one, so I don't need to go into the reasons why in terms of their ownership of the club. A little bit of the blame, I think, is with JDT. I think throwing the toys out of the pram and being a stench around the training ground and around the club after not getting his own way in the summer, I think he's got to hold his hands up and see the impact that that clearly had on the squad. But the ultimate blame for me lies with Wagger and Sahale. They are head of all the footballing operations and the day-to-day stuff at Ewood Park. And there have been things on the pitch and the related off-the-pitch stuff that affects on the pitch that I think are absolutely on their watch. You know, we've spoken about January transfers and all of those types of things and the heads that have needed to roll for some of the mistakes have been made. I think ultimately that comes from the standards that are set by Wagger and Sahale, of which, from what I'm seeing, there are zero. So I think the whole footballing operations side of thing stinks at Rovers, quite frankly. And then also the other off the pitch stuff, which I'll mention, you know, as a fan base, we need engaging and we need exciting. And in a season like this, Ewood Park needs to be a happy place to go to. The match day experience, I think, is pathetic at Rovers. I think it really is. We've got nothing to motivate the fans. We've got nothing to inspire the fans. One of my boys' birthdays is in April. If I go in the club shop, I can barely get him anything for his birthday in April. So all of the other associated footballing operations are literally a club just dying a death. So I just think everything all in, you know, the things that we need to get behind the side and then all of the footballing stuff on the pitch, I think firmly rests with Wagger and Sahale. But as I say, just a little smidge of JDT in there as well. I do actually have a little bit of sympathy for John Eustace. I think he's walked into a very bad situation and asking Eustace to use all the players that JDT assembled and then do it differently. Lots of sympathy there for that. And then to answer your other question, what would I change ahead of next season, no matter what? Wagger. Literally Wagger. I really don't know what he contributes to Rovers. I think the standards are poor. I think everything off the pitch is absolutely terrible. And we need to take inspiration from the likes of Coventry, Luton and Ipswich Town, that if you get those off the pitch operations right and you've got the right men in charge, right women in charge, who are driving the standards in the right way, then you can get yourself back to success and back to glory. And I think ultimately Wagger is the person I'd change in all of that and just get a nice, dynamic CEO of the club who can represent Venky's and use the blocks that Venky's are giving us at the moment, but somehow make us greater than the sum of our parts. I just have no faith in Wagger doing that at all. So he's what I'd change.
Ian, we've spoken off the air on these podcasts about that boardroom level. Standards have got to be higher. You've got to drive the standards. Try and be excellent. If you try and be excellent, you end up being mediocre. Don't try and be mediocre. Is sort of the phrase goes. Was it the classic aim for the stars and you might hit your head on the ceiling? Do you agree with Ryan with those comments?
Absolutely. I think he articulated it probably far better than I can. But yeah, the culture of the club is one of this'll do. And that comes from Wagger. And he said as much in his pre-season interview with Radio Lancashire. There's no pressure on JDT. Hey, wouldn't it be bad if we went down this year because there's a juicy TV deal? There's no sense of ambition. And the only time I ever felt motivated and enthused about Rovers in the last 4 or 5 years was when I spoke with JDT. And I was fortunate enough to bump into him on 3 occasions. And on each occasion, I left the conversation light on my feet, spring-heeled, feeling like there was somebody who cared and who had a sense of what excellence looked and felt like. Yeah, and this is a man who's been an international footballer, he's played at Milan, he's worked for some amazing coaches in his career, and he knows what good looks like. Rovers, it's just, this'll do. And I get the sense that Steve Waggett's role at Rovers is just to keep grief off Venky's desk, basically. I think he's very soft up. He's not challenging the owners. He's not going to them with challenging proposals or propositions. That sort of says, here's what we could do. Invest, invest, invest. And another one of my benchmarks is a look at what Andy Holt does at Stanley. And he's not without fault. And he's had a bit of a torrid 18 months or so himself at Stanley. But he was always prepared to spend money in genuine investments that would bring income into the club. Because he saw that that was what Stanley needed. They needed to grow. They needed to grow the fan base. They needed to get it younger. They needed to be innovative to compete with Rovers, Burnley, Preston, Bolton, all the other Lancashire clubs around them. And I just don't get a sense at Rovers that there is that kind of culture. I think there are a lot of good people at Rovers who have a lot of really good ideas, but they're stymied. They can't get the budget. They can't get the approval. They can't get the sign-off. They can't move quickly enough to do things. And I think that's what I would change.
Sticking on JDT, though, and I've just likened it back to some of the relegations that we've been through in the last 30, 35 years. Of course, everyone looks back to the Premier League in 98-99 and would perhaps blame a mixture of Roy Hodgson, players, Brian Kidd. It definitely felt like the brunt of the relegation in 16-17. Whereas this season, it kind of feels like any one of the names that I've said, and perhaps JDT almost is getting away with it a bit too lightly. Do you think JDT gets getting away with it a little bit this season in terms of some of the naivety of the performances, particularly around Christmas?
The biggest mistake Rovers made in the summer was not accepting JDT's resignation, because he'd come to do a project and the terms of reference, the scope, the budget completely changed. And Rovers should have sort of said, we brought you in under false pretenses. Yeah, you're right, you can go. Holding him to do something, and I think that's where the problem started. Did he handle it in the most professional way thereafter, particularly from December onwards? Categorically not. And I think, as other people have said, he's accountable for that. but Rovers' mistake was not accepting that there was a new normal. It'd be interesting to see what's going to happen to Greg Broughton in the summer, because I can't believe that Eustace is a Broughton appointment, and what's happened to this developing youngsters and playing Premier League football so that we can sell them on.
Rich, who shoulders most of the blame for you this season down at Ewood?
You'd say everything filters down from the top, but you've written about Inky's troubles in India. I read the fans' forum notes, and out of that, you suggest there's no troubles in India, that they've got no issues sending money across, and if it's wanted and needed, then they can do it. So my big thing is about the change of direction, and we suddenly got to January, and things were going wrong off the pitch. JDT, there was clearly something afoot with interest in JDT, and I do feel that he manufactured his way out of the club, reputation intact, into a great job. But on the other hand, I've got to agree with Ian that he was the one, the only one I got any confidence at that football club driving standards and changing the mentality. And that has got to be the first thing that changes. That there's this thing where he's trying to push standards. Then I've heard players' interviews saying about, you know, how Eustace is great and bringing everyone together. And while that will be great in the dressing room, I do think they need to be challenged. And I do think JDT was willing to put himself out there, you know, make decisions that weren't popular for the better side of the club. But the January recruitment, you've got to look at it and think, we're sat there against Coventry at home. And I know I've read the explanation why they kept three centre-halves on, but the fact you've not got anybody really to bring on, and we'll go back to Duncan Maguire, but there's no way that the project and direction they were looking at going in was making the signings that they did in January. No club that's looking long-term, and all the great things that we've heard, and I've spoken to Greg numerous occasions, and I do like the guy, and I do think, again, he's probably somebody that if he had, you know, a fairer chance to implement the things he wanted, things would look different. But you've got to look at the recruitment and the squad that we've been left with. How much of that is down to finance and how much of that is down to decisions will probably dictate. But you're only ever as good as the players got. Rovers shouldn't be in the position that they've got for so many reasons. But ultimately, the squad they've been left with for this second half of the season's just not been able to produce enough results. And you've got to look at the recruitment and the team that they're putting out on the pitch is players who've been there for 2-3 transfer windows. The team has just not moved in the way that it should have done.
No, absolutely. Some good points there, Rich. Holly, I'll come to you to finish off this section two. I'm sure you can probably repeat a lot of what's been said. And so I just want to come on to John Eustace from this. So do you buy into sort of Ryan's, what he said, which was that Eustace perhaps has been dealt a bad hand? Or do you think that ultimately Eustace will have had 17 games, you know, pretty much going on, what, half a season or a third of the season plus? Does he have to carry some of this? I mean, obviously it feels like some of the fan base is kind of turning against him a little bit. They talk about it was the Stoke win, his win. You know, we can't win at home. The Coventry, Sheffield Wednesday performance was really poor. Obviously, they won away at Leeds, which is this outlier, this misnomer for the second half of the season. But do you think Eustace has to keep Rovers up to sort of give himself that chance? Do you think Rovers fans would stick with him next year should they go down?
I think it's a tough one. I think absolutely he was dealt a bag of spanners to kind of pick up and do the best that he could with. I think he does need to take some responsibility for the lack of improvement. Every club below us that had a new manager had a bounce, and we had nothing. And so I do think, like, whilst I don't want to, like, get on the Eustace out train, because I'm absolutely not in support of that, I do think he needs to take some responsibility of the position that we're still in right now. I'd like to see him show a bit more ambition, but I think, to your point around, I can't remember who said it, sorry, around the ambition of Steve Waggett, like, why would he have any kind of plans to kind of question what Venkies are doing? He's a yes man because he wants to keep his job. Yeah. Like, at the end of the day, why would he question his bosses? Because they're the ones that pay him his now salary. But I do think Waggett is the one thing that I would absolutely change. If you get rid of the Venkies, you've still got Waggett, and Waggett is always going to be the one that makes the decisions, the one that always has his his ideas and what he's allowed to agree to. I think it, ultimately he's the one that is causing a lot of the stagnants around the club.
Here's one for you then, just on that, Holly. And I know I'm putting you on the spot here, and it's a bit of an unfair question. So
thanks.
You don't have to answer it, but would you take Rovers going down if it got rid of Waggett?
Yeah.
Ryan?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're kicking the can down the road on so many elements. And yeah, we're having the same conversation next year with Waggett in charge. So absolutely, I'd take that.
Rich?
No. I was just going to say, we've been through the situation of not having a CEO down there and what comes of it. And while people will argue, you know, the opposite of it, I probably dread could come, you know, if that makes sense. And being privy to a few things, you know, the way that decisions are made down there, how they could come about, you could be opening all sorts of things. So that's probably what I'd say on that one.
No, I wouldn't either, because I think the biggest issue at Rovers is the owners, because the owners appointed him. And as I said earlier, Steve Waggett is performing the role in accordance with the instructions that he gets from Wenger's, which is basically keep things ticking over, reduce costs, spend as little as you possibly can. So even if we got rid of Steve Waggett, we'd just recruit somebody else who would carry it out. I mean, frankly, yeah, if any of us on this panel were offered £300,000 a year to do Wenger's bidding, that'd be quite tempting, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm only bringing it up because last time Rovers went down to League One, of course, was it Paul Senior was the name of the sort of joker in charge at the time, and he soon left, didn't he? And I think what we can all probably agree on, and Rovers fans the world over will agree with this, is that no matter what happens on Saturday, the team is going to look so different next year, and it has to look so different next year, doesn't it? Just right across the board. So, yeah, plenty to ponder on. We'll be interested to know what your thoughts. Of course, you can get involved in the conversation over on the brfcs.com forums. Right, we're going to be back in section three. We're a bit lighter. We'll be looking at April's Player of the Month. Some concerns coming out of the fans' forum minutes. Also looking ahead of the new EFL deal and some potential impact on season tickets. Should they ever be released? I assume that they have to release season tickets once the season's over. Knowing Rovers, though. Oh, gosh. I'll see you after these messages. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like seeing Sammy Smodic get the winner at Ewood Park. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome back to section three of this week's 4,000 Holes podcast, the What Now Show, proudly part of the TalkSport Fan Network, with me, your host Roger, joined by Ian, Rich, Ryan and Holly. And we're on to section three, and I go straight back to Mr. Herbert for April's Player of the Month. Over to you, Ian.
Yeah, there's a recurring theme here, isn't it? I could just record this once and use it about seven or eight times during the season. Guess who Player of the Month is for April? That's right, it's Sammy Smodics, funnily enough. He was closely trailed by Hayden Carter and Sondre Tronstad. I would give second place to Sondre Tronstad, though, on the basis that he played all six games, whereas Hayden Carter only played three, but their scores were pretty similar. So Hayden had a really good game against Leeds, as did the whole team. But what is fascinating for me about April is our two worst performances of the season so far came either side of that astonishing Leeds United win. So the team averaged, and this is the good people of the RFCS voting, 3.06 against Bristol City, and then managed to improve that to a princely 3.93 against Sheffield Wednesday. We had the all-time lowest score against Bristol City as well. I don't think anybody who saw the highlights needs to work out which player got that. I won't read the score.
I was going to ask you that, because let's face it, it's boring now with Smodic. He's the player of the year, whatever, we move on. But
well, you're inching into my territory for the
just
next bit,
just before. Tell us, the panel want to know, the listeners want to know, tell us who got the lowest score, Dom Hyam away at Bristol or Ainsley Pears at home against Sheffield Wednesday.
It was Dom Hyam. because really? He made three absolute howlers, whereas Ainsley only made two absolute howlers, or one and a half, I suppose you could say. And Dom Hyam was the other half involved in one of the years. So anyhow, yeah, player of the season to date. It's a two-horse race, but I'm not sure whether he can turn it round on Saturday, but it's going to be Sammy. He's narrowly ahead of Sondra Tronstad, who I think has been one of the successes of the season in terms of the recruitment team. Will be hugely proud of him. I'm delighted in the pre-season friendly against Accrington Stanley. I said, I like that lad. I think he'll go far. He then proceeded to have a pretty ropey opening couple of games and got dropped. I said, what do you know? Well, here we go. Yeah, I can recognise a player after all. I think the players that haven't covered themselves in glory over the season would include, well, yeah, the likes of Ainsley Pears. Amazingly, because his form roller coasters, he's not amongst the laggards, but Dylan Markenday, Sam Gallagher, the eternal BRFCS. So, I don't know whether we just use him like kicking the cat, isn't he? He's something of the target. Andrew Moran, at the moment, is looking like he will pick up the wooden spoon of players who play regularly. There are some scores lower, but they're for people who haven't made particularly regular appearances. So Cal McFanzian has been one of the successes of the second half of the season. But yeah, it's the Sammy and Sondra show, I think, in the Player of the Season contest.
And just to round off this section, tell us who's got the highest score on your list, because I can see a 7 at the bottom of the list.
Oh, this is only a screen grab for April. So did you mean April?
No,
mean
player of the year. I can see a 7. It's a name that Rovers fans will
forget. Billy Cumetio, for his cameo appearance against Newcastle, scored 7.3. But I'm not giving him player of the year on the basis of that. I don't care. It's just not happening.
that's a strange one, though, isn't it? I'm sure everyone's feeling the same about... He came on against Newcastle and, okay, he wasn't totally convincing, but he looked
I thought
okay,
he looked great.
He looked all right.
He looked great. I thought he was the prototype Chris Samba when he came on.
I was going to say, I'm surprised that Eustace hasn't managed to, maybe even on Saturday. That might be a hot take for Saturday. Cometio 90th minute header when we're pumping the long ball forward to the 6'5" Liverpool loney. Oh,
well, if we're a goal down with 5 minutes to go, we need a point.
Like more we said faith before, in him scoring than Sam Gallagher.
Like we said, this season will be over. Right, well, let's not dwell on that too much more because Sammy's the man. We'll talk about him in the summer, I'm sure. I'll come back to you, Holly. Have you had a chance to have a look through the fans forum minutes, or what's your thoughts on sort of season tickets next year and also the TV deal? Because obviously you and Ryan are some of the long distance Rovers fans. I know, without wanting to plug RT at Laboria podcast again, where you can listen to Ryan and Elliot Jackson, of course, our friends over there. But Ryan, you spoke well on that podcast about travelling Rovers fans and Rovers fans who don't live within Blackburn and Saturday night football or Friday night football or Thursday night football. So what's your concerns going into next year, Holly? Whatever happens, Rovers are going to be affected by the TV deal, come what may.
Yeah, obviously, as you mentioned, I don't live in Blackburn. So a season ticket for me is just not something that I'm interested in. I do go to several away games a season, and something that I think the club should really be looking into is having game packages more often that are available to fans, and not even like home fans as well. I think the price of season tickets over the past few years has been something that I think has priced out a lot of people, and I think it's really about how we can engage and bring fans in and bring younger fans in and continue to build on that fan base. And I think the way that you do that is make it accessible. Easiest way to make it accessible is cost. We should be really looking into dynamic ways to bring people into the club. And yeah, I do think we should be looking into set game packages, whether you can say that you're going to come to, I don't know, 16 games a season, and then you choose which games you can go to. People have got a lot of other things to pay for. So how are we bringing people in? How are we attracting people to do it? And I'd be interested to know how, if the new EFL deal comes in, how are clubs really using that money to make attractive game packages for their fans? Because ultimately, clubs are nothing without the fans. If there's no people coming to watch your games, you're not making any money anywhere else.
I am concerned for the whole of football, actually. I liken this, if we think about music, for example, you know, it's nice watching Glastonbury on TV and it's nice putting Spotify on and listening to, you know, live bands, but there's nothing like going to a gig and seeing that band live. And football's kind of going the same way now. I think fans are getting really used to just being able to watch games when they want across all the different kickoff times. A bit like Spotify, you can just, you know, play your Spotify and listen to those bands when you want in a different way to what it used to be when we were all growing up, kind of doing BitTorrents or whatever it was. So, you know, the tide has really changed and football in general has got a problem. I then liken this and link this into some of the points I've been raising about, you know, the standards off the pitch and all the things that we should be doing as a club. Rovers are missing a massive opportunity with our fan base. Fans like me, like Holly, like my good friend Jonathan Secker, other people I know, we support Rovers really because we were glory hunters before Man City fans were glory hunters. You know, why the hell do I support Rovers living in Lincoln? It's because Rovers won the Premier League. They got my attraction. I loved Alan Shearer. The rest is history. I've never supported anyone else. We are missing such a trick with our fan base because the likes of me and Jonathan are still fanatic. And we've now brought children into this world. The only reason I was at the Stadium Alight is because Archie and Freddie wanted to go to the Stadium Alight. I would have happily not gone to the Stadium Alight and I would have missed a 5-1 away win. Jonathan's lad has absolutely begged him to go to Leicester on Saturday to see the game. Jonathan doesn't want to go there. This is the fanatic fans we're dealing with. So off the pitch, I just think we need to be really creative and think, right, we've got a section of our fan base that live in Blackburn and will always go to the games and will always buy season tickets. That's like the core fan base. We'll protect them, we'll look after them, and we'll make it as cheap as possible because Blackburn's not an affluent area. People like me, people like Holly, people like Jonathan, we've got fuel and food and other things to think about every single time we go. I would absolutely snap the club's hand off at something like a 10-game or 12-game flexible season ticket where I can go to any 10 or 12 games across the season, but ultimately my price per game works out at the same as what someone who's going to 23 games a season is paying for. That for me is then you're looking after the locals and you're looking after fans like me, and ultimately you're getting fans into the stadium. When that creativity and that engagement with fans like me, like Holly, like Jonathan isn't happening, guess what I'm going to do? After work, I'm just going to stick Sky Sports on and watch Rovers play in that midweek game at Ewood Park. And that's made it just so much more easier for me, hasn't it? There was a time when I was doing the stupid trips up to Ewood Park on a midweek and getting home at 1-2 in the morning because I wanted to be there. But I just absolutely don't feel like that now because everything off the pitch and the match day experience that we've spoken about before isn't just not dragging me through the door.
Sorry, I just wanted to clarify that I wasn't a glory hunter and I was in fact born in Blackburn. And that is the reason I support the club. But you do make a really, really good point. There are fans up and down the country that have supported Blackburn because of the success that we've had in the past. And it's how we hold on to those fans without turning them away. I completely agree with Ryan's sentiments.
Yeah, I mean, I remember going to university and first day there, seeing a lad in a Rover shirt, and I ran up to him and was like, oh my God, are you from Blackburn? Whereabouts in Blackburn do you live? And he's like, I've never been to Blackburn. I just started supporting them in the 90s. I live in Basingstoke or something like that. I've been to a few away games, but I've never been to Ewood Park. And again, like, yeah, I mean, that's so unlikely now. And we've got some amazing fan groups. I know just going on Facebook, the Hong Kong fans, obviously the New York Rovers, who we know several friends of the podcast. Jared, people like that, who are some amazing Rovers international fans, Australian fans, all over the show. Get up at ridiculous o'clock to watch the Rovers. So the love is there, isn't there, from the fan base. But yeah, they need to tap into that. Rich, just going off the fans of the EFL deal, coming onto the fans forum minutes. You will have read them, I'm sure, in your sort of journalistic capacity. Talk to me about the fans forum minutes and about some of the concerns that people have had coming out of that. Because let's just say they've been sort of a mixed or muted response to the recent fans forum minutes, which are available on the Rovers website. If you go on, find it on there or the official website, all the minutes are on there. But can you just highlight some of them for somebody who perhaps hasn't read them?
I think minutes in themselves are very dull and boring, aren't they? And you, by reading them, you're missing out the detail, because reading through them, a lot of it is either we can't discuss it or we have discussed it and how much of it is portrayed, you know, in the minutes that come across. It did feel very much like everything's fine. And if it was fine, I would like that to be, you know, expressed to a wider audience than just come out in a line that SW responded to so-and-so saying that Venkies have assured us there's, you know, there's no issues here. And I think a lot of people who go to the meetings as well are representing the fans, but also there's questions, you know, from our own personal situations, which is always going to be a difficult thing to, you know, you feel like a lot of it is just responding to certain fans' concern, and how much does that represent a fan base, which you're never going to be able to do. And I do think the fact that, you know, they only get them in minute form, the fans' forums that used to be the case where they'd be put out on Radio Lancashire, as press would be able to go and listen. There'd be fans there from a number of different fans groups who wouldn't be afraid to, you know, to ask certain questions. So why we've moved away from that, it'll be a godforsaken job to be on that fans forum, I can imagine, because everybody will have an opinion saying how rubbish they are and how pointless they are. And I do get it, how people want to get something from them, but it does feel a lot like nothing actually gets resolved. They're every, what, the three months of the quarterly, and how much has really moved on in that time. A lot of the questions are directed at the wrong people as well. So it is difficult, but reading them, it did just feel like everything's going to be okay. And then the bit about, we don't know the budgets, we don't know about season tickets, and our recruitment's going to be signing a 15-year-old lad, and we'll try doing that every time that we can. So I certainly didn't feel any great enthusiasm to be signing up for said season tickets as and when they do arrive.
Yeah, it did, like I said, just felt like, well, we'll see what division we're in. We'll price accordingly, and let's hope we win the lottery again.
Yeah, it's up to John Eustace whether he wants a strike. Well, I'm sure he'd take any striker, whether it be one who's scored in the MLS or not, he'd take any striker, never mind Duncan Maguire.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Ian, do you have anything to add to that in fans' 4 minutes? I know there's been talk about fixing parts of the stadium. You know, you've been at Ewood enough times this season to realise that it's perhaps showing its age a little bit. Do you think that concerns sort of on and off the field perhaps are being underplayed in those recent fans' 4 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, the fans' forum is a tick box exercise to me. The EFL sort of say you've got to do these, so we do them. But it's not a serious conversation. It's not a serious decision-making and action forum. Again, it goes back to the points we're making earlier. This isn't about excellence. So what would be really good would be to almost like have the equivalent of a shareholders meeting, as Richard just sort of said, live on Radio Lancs, or at least recorded and the whole thing available. And you write in a question, you submit it beforehand, and so, you know, if there's a theme that's emerging with sufficient people wanting the answers, those are the questions that are answered. And you get some detailed discussion, really, and get to the root cause of a lot of what's going on. But that's never going to happen. It's just never going to happen. So that, you know, the fans forum is just paying lip service to the idea of consultation. I don't think there's ever been a process of electing anybody to go on it, or people standing up and sort of saying, I want to be your candidate representing the Riverside stand. I just don't, the whole process is shonky.
That's the only way we're getting communication at the minute. I think that's the thing. You know, if they were just an exercise to do that, and we were getting regular communication from people, I don't think, but at the minute it feels like, oh, fans 4 minutes are out, let's see what's said, because it feels like the club's at such a pivotal time. Whereas if there was more information out there, and, you know, these were just a top-up or, you know, something like that, it's at the minute that these are like the sole thing that we're hearing on anything. I think that's probably what gets people up, that there's probably more prominence placed on them for no other reason than we're not hearing anything else in any other situation.
I get the sense that the fans are hoping that one of these meetings will happen and we'll get some meaningful communication, but it goes back to, you know, our owners are under scrutiny and under investigation by their national government. There's no money has come over, despite what is said in these minutes. There's no money that's come over since Q3 last year. The Adam Wharton sale has kept the lights on. The David Raya money and the inevitable Sammy Smodic sale in the summer will keep the lights on next season. But if the owners can't or won't genuinely invest in the way that I described Andy Holt earlier, if they can't or won't do that, just get rid of us. Because if we've got to be a genuinely self-sustaining club, and I don't have a problem with that, that we've no divine right to ask them to put 20 million quid in a year, but if you don't want to do that, sign it over to the fans. We'll get relegated three or four times. We'll find a natural level. And then gradually, we'll group round that. But at least we'll be fan-owned. Look at Exeter City. See how they've done. You know, Portsmouth were once fan-owned and they sold out to Michael Eisen, didn't they? But they had to drop down to find a natural level to bounce back. Because there's no one organisation can raise the working capital that's necessary. So instead of our wages being on average 10 grand a week, they're more likely to be 100 quid a week. So, yeah, you're playing in the Blackburn combination or whatever. Well, if that's what it takes, I just don't understand wanting to continue their ownership but not wanting to truly, genuinely invest in the club.
We could talk about this all night, and I know the time is pushing on, and I'm eager to let all you go. Hopefully, when you're listening to this, maybe you're nearly at Leicester for the big game on Saturday, or you're on your walk trying to avoid the score, whatever it is. A huge thank you for joining us tonight on this week's pod. I just want to come back down the line, though, and try and finish on a positive note. And I want to ask Ian, Rich, Ryan and Holly what their moment of the season has been. Now, it doesn't have to have been something that was on the pitch. It could have been a moment off the pitch, a particular away game, the fans' forum takeover, whatever it could be. Ian, and I'm putting you all on the spot a little bit, but
Sunderland away. It has to be, because I went to Southampton away. We got hammered by a team in red and white. So to get to go away and hammer a team in red and white, that kind of made up for it. To Ryan's point earlier, I went because Stuart and Matt wanted to go, not necessarily because I particularly wanted to go. It was a new ground. I put a tick in a box. I'm going to see Springsteen there in a few weeks' time so I can rehearse where I'm going to park and the route to the ground. So that's why I went. And we won 5-1. So that's my moment of the season.
Sunderland away. Rich, do you have a moment, a standout moment? It doesn't have to be on the pitch. It could be off the pitch, experience. Or
probably a moment in sadness that brought just a great feeling around Ewood was the Middlesbrough goal during the Matt Sillitoe applause. I think that, never mind just this season, in a moment inside a football stadium, I think that'll probably go up with as many as I've felt, really. So that, and then on the same thing, Trav away at Watford when he went over to Matt's family. That was a really touching moment, I thought. And I think, I would say, we've kicked the club a lot, but I think the response that they did in memory of Matt was deserving of real mention.
No, absolutely. I'd put that forward for Birdie and Glenn. It's been a tough season for the fans.
Yeah.
A lot of big personalities, hasn't it, this season? So another reason why we're looking forward to drawing a line under the season. But yeah, that moment against Middlesbrough, the timing was perfect. Yeah, great shout there. Ryan, a moment on or off the pitch that stands out for you this season as a particular sort of happy memory?
Yeah, well, I definitely endorse what Rich said there. So thank you for saying that, Rich. That's really important to say. I've got one on the pitch and one off the pitch. On the pitch, away at QPR this season was a great one. I went down to London with my boys and we just had such a great day down on the train. And it was that stupidly hot weather in October as well. So I was still wearing shorts in October, which was just ridiculous. And the boys loved it. And I just said to them, don't get used to this because it doesn't usually happen. And guess what we did? 1-3-0 away at Stoke. And then they were there at the 5-1 at Sunderland. So what am I? and then off the pitch, I don't know why, but I think Archie must have been listening to you, Ian, with your Sondre Tronstad stuff, because he begged me to buy a Norway flag before the season started for some really unknown reason. I was like, yeah, we'll get it. And you can get them pretty easy off Amazon. So he's been to every game with this Norway flag in support of Sondre Tronstad. And when both boys got to meet Sondre, we waited after a game once. And I've got a picture with the two boys with Sondre and the Norway flag. It was one of those kind of like makes yourself cry as a parent moments. It was just great to see how happy they were. So that's me off the pitch moment.
Excellent, excellent. Holly, come to you.
Unfortunately, I've just been trying to look back and on my pictures. And I think a lot of the away games I went to, we didn't actually get any good results. So
that doesn't matter.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, for me, football is about the people that I'm with. It's about the football, but it's about the memories that we make. And Plymouth away was one of those days for me. It was glorious sunshine. It was a real weekend that I spent with some people that I really enjoy spending time with. And it was almost like it was early on in the season that where we still had a little bit of positivity about us, even if we weren't getting the results that we wanted to. So I think Plymouth is definitely a fond memory. And if they do go down, I will miss the away day because it was a good one.
No, very well said. Just on my personal level, quickly, just on the pitch, even though I wasn't there and I didn't see any of the match, I got married on the 13th of April this year. And me and my wife, Lucy, who's also a Rover season ticket holder, we'd written off Leeds away as, well, we'll lose. Don't worry about it. It's not going to ruin the day. You know, they might lose 5-0, but it'll still be the best day of my life. And I can honestly say, hand on heart, that the most nervous I was on my own wedding day was when I asked my uncle when we got to the venue. I said, what's a Rover score? And he was like, well, minute, they're winning 1-0. I was like, oh my God, how long is left? And like 5 minutes plus stoppage time. And I kept walking around the venue, sort of welcoming people. Oh yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thanks for coming to the wedding. And looking at my uncle at the corner of my eye, like, what's the score? What's the score? Is it finished? Has it finished? Has it finished? And then, yeah, Lucy, my wife, we were off doing pictures and there's a bit of a cloud came over and she just turned to me and out of nowhere, she said, "Blimey heck, we beat Leeds 1-0. And I was like, yes, that is my wife. That is a sort of vindicated choice. So that, and then obviously off the pitch, Ian, going down to Brockle just before Christmas to interview some of the players and being there. It was like all my Christmases came at once. We were like two naughty schoolboys walking around Brockle, like, oh, maybe we shouldn't go in here, but what they're going to do, tell us off, who, you know, and that was fantastic. So yeah, those are my two moments. Hopefully we've
I still think they on... thought that we were the IT support team because we had these high-vis fleeces.
Well, maybe next year if we do it again, Ian, we might get a game up front, so who knows.
Can you reboot my laptop?
And on a lighter note, thank you all for joining us on this week's 4,000 Holes podcast. From myself, Ian, Rich, Ryan and Holly, it's been a pleasure to spend this time with you. Fingers crossed, toes crossed, arms crossed, everything crossed. Get your lucky shirt out. Get your lucky underpants on this weekend. Let's hope Rovers can do it and survive. And yeah, we will perhaps worry about the summer in the summer. If you do want to stick around for the podcast extra, Ian will be asking a couple of quiz questions and plenty more to come. But from here and from now, stay safe. Come on, you Blues. Let's one more point. That's all we need. One more point. Until next time. See you soon.
Okay, podcast extra time. So it's not very often that I raise my head above the parapet, particularly on Twitter, but I did before the Sheffield Wednesday game because the commonly held wisdom was that we shouldn't sell all the tickets in the away end to Wednesday fans. And I sort of said, right, no, this is Blackburn Rovers. We're making a statement. We are not intimidated by 8,000 Sheffield Wednesday fans in the away end. I have fully endorsed the decision. What will be better than sticking it to a full Wednesday away end? So I wish to humbly apologise and retract my bold statement and my faith in the club. Ryan, you now have right of reply.
Well, what I will say, Ian, is normally I have that view. So we've had Leeds in that Darwin end. We've had Man City when we're in the Prem, Man United. So I usually hold that view that I love nothing more than to stick it to a big fan base in the Darwin end. My problem was not in that game, not in a relegation six-pointer, not in a match that means so much to Rovers, not in a match where a win keeps us safe. That, for me, was the foolish decision. And in a game like that, handing any kind of advantage to a Sheffield Wednesday side already in form was the fatal mistake for me. And I've been vindicated in two ways, Ian. One is Will Volks backed me up after the game. And he said it felt like a home game. Now we know how Sheffield Wednesday play at Hillsborough. So if it felt like Hillsborough, we got our just desserts for selling out that away end. Secondly, there is only one explanation for Ainsley Pearce's attempt at that third goal, and that is because he absolutely shit himself because he had 7,000 away fans behind him and he literally did not know what to do. You are not telling me that if that stand was empty or even if they were all in the top tier, Ainsley Pearce would not make that mistake. He literally bricked it. So I've been vindicated, Ian. Absolutely.
You have. Well, you have. Much to my annoyance, I have to say. I'm still of the belief that, you know, the team that I support is full of characters and they rise to the challenge, you see. But there we go. Anyhow.
Can I just add, as devil's advocate, two of Rovers' three home wins in 2024, and arguably two of Rovers' best performances of the year in 2024, namely Wrexham and Newcastle, came with full support in the Darwin end. So
I think I made that point. Yeah. and we also managed to not beat Rotherham when they were followed by three people and a dachshund called Colin in the away end. Yeah. But there we go. Anyway, bygones. Bygones. Right, here is my quiz question, and it's a lineups question. The last time we played Leicester in the league at Leicester was Tuesday the 17th of September 2013. So I would like you to tell me either a player in the starting 11 or one of the two subs that played that night. For the record, Leicester City beat us 2-1. Lloyd Dyer and David Nugent scoring for Leicester. Obviously, I'm not going to tell you the Rovers player. So I'm going to start with Roger. So can you give me somebody in that lineup on Tuesday the 17th of September?
Tommy Spur.
Correct. Ryan, I'll come to you next.
I think I was at this game and I think Jordan Rhodes scored a penalty.
He did. Correct. Boom. Holly, next.
Was Paul Robinson our goalkeeper at the time?
He was not. I'm afraid you're out. Okay. Rich.
2000 to start of the season. Hanley.
Correct. Roger.
Corey Evans.
Oh, correct.
That's brave with his groin.
Absolutely.
Early season. Early though, in the season, though,
yeah. Ryan.
Oh, had we signed him at this point, I'm going to take a risk with Ben Marshall.
Correct. Back to you, Rich. There's five players that you've named so far. So we've still got six of the starting lineup and two subs.
Josh King?
Correct. Back to you, Roger.
I think it was Jake Keane in net.
It was Jake Keane in net. Well done, sir.
Because I remember the fans hated Jake Keane and said, take him out. And Bowyer said, no, I'm not. And then he did. So, yeah.
I remember standing behind the away goal at MK Dons in the League Cup watching Jake Keane. Still brings back shivers.
I don't think this is right. Dunny, David Dunn?
No, you're right, I'm afraid. Rich, back to you.
Who have we got? Defence, Spur and Hanley?
Yes. So we're after a right back and...
Well, right, well,
yeah, another centre.
We never had a right back. So, Jason Lowe.
He's in the starting team.
Oh,
I'd be surprised if he played right back, so I'll give you a bit of a clue there, Roger.
No, I seem to remember back at this time of the Sporting Rovers that everyone had a really short name. A lot of short names. Is that right? I was looking down the list. A lot of surnames with really like, oh, was he still there at this point? I don't think, oh, no.
Josh King has already gone, of course, with short name.
Yeah, short name, short name.
Are you on the right lines?
Yeah, they all had short names. Oh, Todd Kane.
Correct. I think he was the right back. So I suspect that Lowe played in midfield on that one. So we are a centre back, a centre mid, and two subs.
Surely centre Lowe and Evans. This is another midfielder.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. So this is probably a lad who should be a centre midfielder, but they never played him in centre midfield. Kearney.
Correct. Back to you, Rog. So we're after a centre back.
Two subs. Who'd be the other striker? Leon Best? No.
Which to win it on penalties then? Can you name the centre back?
2013 centre half, who's not Grant Hanley. Dan had gone by then, hadn't he?
Had he?
Oh, I was going to say Scott Dan.
Had he not gone?
He'd gone.
Oh. No, Scott Dan is the... Two subs, anybody?
When did Dan go then?
I thought he'd gone by that point.
Did Dan do a season and a bit in the Championship?
Must have done, because it was after the window closed.
Well, that's what I was saying. September. I thought he'd have gone in
January, perhaps.
Possibly.
God, so they had 18 months of Scott Dan in the Championship and did that badly.
Are the two subs short names?
No.
All right.
Not particularly. One of the subs is a fullback. One's a winger.
Not an Olsen.
It was an Olsen. Which one?
Mark
Both Puss. Of them.
And the winger?
Conway?
No.
They've never had a winger.
Wasn't there long. Let's put it that way.
Good.
Chris Taylor.
Chris Taylor.
We could be there all night trying to...
I liked Chris Taylor. I also quite like Chris Taylor. I thought he was underrated.
Better than Paul.
The other one I had in my locker to ask you, which I'd be amazed. So last time Rovers went down, we played Brentford on the last day of the season. For 17 million bonus points, can you name anybody that was in the Brentford team that day?
Ollie Watkins?
No.
It was the striker.
Harley Dean.
Yes!
Oh,
yes. £17 million.
£17 million bonus points, I think you'll find those out of you. We listen back to the transfer.
Did Lasaviba, did he score?
He was in the team as well, yeah.
He didn't score. Who scored then?
He did score, yeah.
Oh, I see.
56 minutes, yeah. Yeah, so Mulgrew on 10 minutes, Danny Guthrie on 16. There's a name from the past.
Oh.
Conway with a penalty, making it 3-1. The Rovers lineup that day. Do you want to have a go at that?
Nyambi, Raya, Lenehan, yeah. Mulgrew, Williams, Guthrie, Akpan.
This is like Dad's v Lads football, this, isn't it?
This is
Danny like been a reporter or something.
Sounds like he was working that game, Ian.
Graham and Gallagher. I think, was Jason Lowe suspended? Or did he captain?
No, he was in the team. I think the centre-back you haven't named.
The real question would be, would you prefer that side to be going to Leicester this weekend or our current team?
This side, because it's got Raya in goal. It's got Danny Graham and Sam Gallagher up front.
Lenehan Mulgrew. It wouldn't have been Hoban, would it? He'd have been injured. Gordon Gray was in the studio for Sky. I remember that because everyone was kicking off.
Did Conway come off the bench?
Elliot Ward?
It was Elliot Ward. We had Lucas Jow on the bench.
Ooh.
And Marvin Emners on the bench. So I think to answer your question, Roger, I think that's the strongest
side. That team, yeah.
And we'll put a pun out on Saturday. Yeah.
The only thing that made that relegation a little bit easier to take, not that any relegation is that we kind of knew you were down for about half an hour, didn't you? So you could sort of like process
of
it
game,
before.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
whereas...
it was the opening 20 minutes though, when we went two up and you sort of think, hang on a minute. Was it Forrest that the
Forrest
3-0 swung?
3-0 against Ipswich, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah.
Whereas on Saturday, you don't even want to say it, but a late winner at Birmingham or a late winner at Plymouth.
They both have to win. I think that's the thing. They both have to win. Like I said, Birmingham keeping Rovers up will be sweet for Eustace, won't it?
Yeah.
He's a Villa fan, so...
Careful what you wish for.
Yeah, there is that.
Lovely. Thanks very much, everyone, once again. Appreciate the time and energies. Across the season as well. It's really good. Thank you very much.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus. Serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.